Welcome to another inspirational My Church podcast. We hope that this message will bless and encourage you. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, please visit livelove.ca.
We're going to invite some of our interns up, but can I just say once again, I pray that when they're done, they're each going to get 5 minutes each, and we're going to hear a thought that's kind of, they've all kind of thread their thoughts together, so each takes a little bit of that thought and kind of elaborates on it. But here's what we're going to believe for is, honestly, you're going to be so proud to see how far these guys have come, and the fact that they're willing to stand up in front of 400, 500 people on a Sunday and have a go, that's something worth taking note of. So with no further ado, I would love it. Yeah, and is there going to be a countdown? Yeah. There's a countdown in everything. It's going to get intense. So by the end of this, guys, I mean, by the end of the 5 minutes, you ought to be on your feet just like, what? And like white hanking
that
stuff.
Off,
you
got to
be like, oh my gosh.
Whatever.
Like T.D. Jakes, the Potter's House, better have nothing on us, all right? Okay, so I'm just saying, let's go, okay? So if you guys would you give it big honor, big esteem for Miss Brunette Katombe going to take the stage? And deliver her first message today. We are so proud. Here we go. Interns class of 2018.
Good morning, church. How are you today? That's incredible. Well, today I'm going to talk about faithfulness. When I think about faithfulness, I think about my dad, who's actually here today. So I come from a family of six girls, five sisters. I have five sisters. So six girls, including my mom, that's seven women that my dad has had to deal with. Yeah, it's a lot, but God bless him. We've been fortunate enough to be in this country for the past 17 years. But you know what? Us being here as a family was actually a promise that was spoken to my dad when I was about 2 years old. See, my dad moved to Canada on a word from God when I was 3 years old. How incredible, right? For 3 years, he didn't see his daughters because we were reunited only when I was 6 years old. How many of you have been away from your kid from even just one day? Imagine 3 years, many sleepless nights wondering when he was going to kiss us and hug us again. At the time, we were four girls, two babies. Picture that. But you know what? My dad didn't just sit around. He was faithful with what God had put in his hands. He found jobs after jobs, found a better place for us to live in. He was faithful in anticipation of his promise. And today, that's what I'm going to speak to you about. When I think about another man who's a faithful man, I think about David in the Bible. King David, he was anointed only in his teenage years. He was anointed to be the future king of Israel, but it wasn't until 15 years after that that he actually became king. I've always wondered, why would God give someone a word that he knows wouldn't come to pass until years after? But you know what, church? Can I suggest to you this morning that God is much more preoccupied with who you're becoming on the journey than with you getting to that destination? Because he wants to do the journey with you. He wants to walk with you. He wants to teach you how to trust him in the journey. David was faithful. In 15 years, he became a great lyricist. He became a mighty warrior. He fought in the king's army. He played the harp for the king he was meant to replace. How incredible. That's what waiting looks like, church. Waiting looks like activity. But sometimes we can be so focused on the promise that we become stagnant in the journey. And I think we're meant to look at what we have in our hands because there's something there. Maybe you look at it as something that is insignificant, but God is saying, no, that's significant. Be faithful with the little, church. But you know what? I think it's important that we look at how God actually defines faithfulness. We can find that in Matthew 25. Jesus is telling a story of a master who gave his servants bags of gold. Two of his servants that were given gold came back with double what they had been given, but one came back with the same amount. To the two servants who came back with more, he said, well done, my good and faithful servant. So faithfulness actually looks like fruitfulness. It looks like creating more with what you've been given, right? We can learn from that last servant, though. He came to his master, and I had a verse I hope you can put it up. But he came to the master and said, in Matthew 25, 26, he said, "Your ruthless, shrewd master," I believe in the NIV, he said, "I was afraid of you, so I hid it. I was afraid of you, so I hid it." His perception of who his master was affected his level of faithfulness. He didn't trust his master, right? But this morning, can I encourage you that you can trust God? His word doesn't return void. He is so faithful, and I'm standing as a result of his faithfulness. So this morning, can I ask you right now, what can you do with what God has given you? What can you do with what God has given you? He's faithful. So wait, but wait while being active. Do something, because the promise is coming. Thank you, church.
Now, because the timer hasn't started, so so I want to take us back to 1993. Some of you, you've never been, so welcome. And so picture with me, it's 1993, it's January, we're in the Ottawa Valley, so it's cold, and it was one of the coldest on record, okay? So just imagine, we had a cold one this year. So it's 1993, Full House is playing, Alf, you know, anyone knows those shows, come on. I'm about 8 years old. I've got like the curled hair and the hairspray, that whole look. It's pretty awesome. And like crimped hair was the thing, okay? So this is the picture. and in Canada at that time, there was a massive recession happening, okay? So my parents, who are both here actually, in the front row, they're both registered nurses. And at that time, a lot of people were losing their jobs, being laid off. And both of them were either already laid off or just about to be, okay? So they have 3 kids at this time and a cat. And it's important, I don't know. As an 8-year-old, it was important. But someone comes across their path and offers them a job, well, tells them about a job in the States. And they decide to take it. It's in North Carolina. So they get a job, and they have total peace about it. Both of them together have complete peace, okay? And we've never been there. We've come from a small town. We've been a few places, but not far, right? And we take that step out. So we're heading to North Carolina, put our house on the market in January in a very cold winter, just believing that God has a promise that we're coming to, all right? And they, in their bank account, it doesn't even look like they should be moving. They have less than what would be maybe a month's rent at that time, all right? So they are literally going on a promise that God has for them, that there's something that they're coming to. They have a job, and that's about it. And they're taking their family, they've left what they can see in the front of them, and they've moved all the way to a different country, a different city, a different climate, all right? And when we get there, we were living in a hotel for a few days, about a week, and they find a place to live, and they finally convinced, after a lot of back and forth, to convince the guy that we won't pay our last month's rent, just the first month. So we're getting favor after favor, and within 3 weeks, my dad gets a promotion way above what he actually has credentials for, and my mom's finding favor in her job, and so now we have security, we have more pay than they even thought they were going for, and they're finding community, we found a church, we found people. People are coming alongside, and we're feeling like, okay, we knew that this was the promise, and now we're walking into it. And for us, it can look the same. We don't know what's in front of us, but we have to take that first step. We look at David. David was anointed king when he was, a young boy, maybe in his teens. He was a shepherd. He was nowhere near a castle or a kingdom, right, at that point. And he was told by Samuel that you're going to be king. And then 15 years later, he gets to do that. And in that time, he's constantly being chased by Saul, King Saul at the time, trying to kill him every which way, every time. It seems like every time that David was near him, he was throwing a spear at him. And yet, David keeps faithful and keeps going. And at one point, which I find was really interesting, and this is the big key that I want everyone to take, is with Jonathan, who's King Saul's son. And you see Jonathan at one point along the journey in those 15 years comes to where David's hiding in a field at that time and comes out to him and says, hey, I want to encourage you in God. You are going to be king, and you are going to be king of Israel. And he kind of encourages him, and he reminds him, hey, you know what's on your life, and I'm here for you, and even says, I'm going to be your second. So what I want everyone to think about today is, who do you have in your world? Who do you have that while you're going towards your promise is going to come alongside and stand in the gap with you? Who are you standing in the gap for? Who are you coming alongside? Who can you encourage today? Maybe you need to plug yourself into church. Maybe you need to plug yourself into a connect group, a community. Maybe you should do internships. I don't know. But whatever that looks like for you. And we see King David. He had 15 years. My family wasn't such a long time. They have 1,500 kilometers to go. Think about that, right? Where is it that you're being called into? Maybe it's just an unknown. Maybe it doesn't make sense. Maybe you're supposed to leave a job that has security. Maybe, I don't know what it looks like. Maybe you're supposed to just put yourself out there. And God is going to give you peace. And it's funny how sometimes God gives you peace once you actually take the step. We sometimes are standing there waiting for the peace, but once you start moving forward, that's when you see the peace come alive. All right? And I just want to encourage you with that, that whatever it is that God has on you, that you just keep running, that you keep going towards it, because there is a promise on every life in here. There is a calling, there's a dream, whether it's hidden deep inside, and it's going to come out at some point. So you just need to stay faithful with it. Just like Brunette was talking about, just be faithful in the moment now and keep going, keep walking in it. Amen.
Hello, hello. Oh, is my mic on? All righty. Good morning. All right, so I'm going to get started because we do have a very short time, and that countdown that just happened was pretty scary. So we are going back to the story, continuing on with the theme of David. We're going to talk about David and Goliath. So it's a kind of a popular story. Don't know if you've heard it. We enter in our first character. So we have Goliath. He's this huge guy. It sounds like it from his name. When I imagine him, I actually imagine him as this big hairy guy because I feel like that makes him scarier somehow. But as he comes out on the field and he's challenging the Israelites. And so he's saying, he has this whole other army of Philistines behind him. And he's like, no, guys, I got this. Stands in front of them, his 9-foot self carrying all this heavy stuff. And he's like, all right, so you send your best guy out here and we'll fight and I'll win. But you can try and we'll just take you over and that's the end of it. So here we have the Israelites, the ones that are being challenged. And what's interesting is actually the Israelites are a pretty big deal. They've made it out of Egypt. They've walked literally through the ocean. God has brought them to the mountaintops. And more importantly than that, he has placed his hand on them specifically and said, no, this is my nation. This is who I am like going to work through in the world right now. And yet as this huge guy stands in front of him and says, oh, like you guys are only servants of Saul and nothing more than that. They're like, I mean, yeah, you know, you're like, you're probably right. Large man in front of me. Enter character two. So we have David. David is this tiny guy. He's described at this point probably in his teens, probably still has a couple zits on his face, to be honest. He's nothing but a shepherd boy, youngest of 8 sons. And yet he comes in, he hears what's going on. He, in my mind, brings them a glorified version of a Lunchable. So like meets some cheese, brings it to his brothers. And he's like, hey, you guys have been standing around for a long time. Like, bro, we got a farm to run. Let's go. And they're all like, oh, no. Like, we've been standing here for 40 days because this huge guy says we can't fight him. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense. So they're like, okay, explain the situation. Okay, so he's this huge guy. Okay. So he has a lot of armor. Okay. And he says we're only, like, tiny little men, so we can't do it. Sorry. Do you not know who we are? And so David's like, okay, this tiny guy standing up with his chest out, he's like, no. I'll do it. And they're like, no, there's no way. Saul tells him, king, no, there's no way. And David's like, no. My God is bigger. But how often can we do that? How often can we look at what's right in front of us and say, no, like it doesn't make sense. What it's telling me has to be true because it's right here. I can see it. Instead of listening to who God says we are. Week after week, we've been singing, I am chosen, I am not forsaken, I have a firm foundation. And yet when there's something right in front of you blocking your view, saying, no, you can't, that's when you get scared and turn away really quickly. So for me, one of the things that I don't like, I'm pretty awesome, have my life together pretty much. But one of the things that I don't like is when God gives me question marks instead of periods. So in going into interns, I was actually not supposed to be here. I was supposed to be on a beach in Spain drinking a pina colada. I was supposed to be on exchange this semester. And yet, last November, God, through a whisper, as Pastor Julie tells us, that's literally all it was a feeling, says, maybe you should stay here. And I was like, why? Zero answer. For me, that's my giant. That I'm like, I don't like this. Like, just give me whatever the goal is. We'll get there. However, I don't really care. But tell me where we're going. God's like, nah, I'm not going to tell you. That was right in front of me. And I was like, how am I supposed to explain this to people? What am I supposed to do from this point? How am I just going to go back to school when I've been wanting to go on exchange since I was like 10? How does any of that make sense? And I balked from that. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I should just go. Like, maybe this is what I want and I'm not hearing him right. But David decided to do the opposite because he decided to engage his faith. He decided to face the giant that was right in front of him, even though he literally had something in front of him. He decided to say, no, my God is bigger. I'm going to face it the same way I face the bears and the lions, which to me is still a pretty big deal. But he's like, no, it's fine. Casual Tuesday. He says, I'm going to face them the same way that I face that. And I'm going to say, no, my God is bigger. You're telling me I'm only a servant of Saul, but I'm saying, no, my God is bigger. Because maybe the God that is in you is bigger than the battle around you. Maybe the God that is in you has more power to move those mountains that seem to be burnt in the ground in front of you than what you're seeing with your own two eyes. And I know for us, mountains can be huge things. I mean, mountains, you know, Pastor Caleb and Julie were just in Banff. They're pretty big. But no, God's saying, no, I'm bigger. No, what I'm going to do here is bigger. So step back, engage your faith, and trust me. Don't listen to what's going on around you, but trust me. And know that I'm going to take him through. And so David did that. He took the same stance. He stepped back. He took his little rocks. He trusted in God, threw them, and won.
Guys, so I was born in the very foreign town, as Julie calls it, Winnipeg, Manitoba, okay? Slurpee capital of the world. And at this time, I'm about 13, okay? Life is great because I'm 13, okay? We're going to the church that my grandparents founded when they got to Canada, and my dad is now pastoring the church, okay? My dad is also Nicaraguense, so I grew up in a very Spanish household. Thank you. All right, so lots of noise, lots of dancing, singing, music, and food. If I could just take a little second to talk about carne asada, enchiladas, y tacos. Like, y'all are missing out, and I'm so very sorry. So my life is basically perfect, and then it wasn't anymore. My dad drops the bomb. He's going to step down as pastor, and we're going to move to Seattle, okay? And my Latina feistiness did not like that one little bit. So there's this thing in my family that when one of us kids rebels, they send us away to a family member somewhere else for a couple of months to rehabilitate us, okay? Now, all of my cousins got sent to L.A., okay? Sunny Los Angeles. But here I am, Saturday morning, about to board a flight to Kitchener, Ontario, okay? Like, it's not even Toronto, it's just Kitchener, okay? So I am just not okay with this. And so I sit on that flight and I cry the entire flight. And if you know me, you know that I do not show emotion. Emotions make me very uncomfortable and I do not like it. Okay? So you can tell that this is a big deal. Why am I leaving the church I've grown up with? Why am I leaving Winnipeg? Why am I going to Kitchener and not sunny Los Angeles? Like, I just don't understand. But I'm crying mostly because I feel forgotten. I feel pushed aside and abandoned, and I just don't like that feeling. And David probably felt the same way. See, David was told he was going to be the next king. Okay, but yet we find David running for his life. We find David hiding from Saul. Yeah. Okay? Oh, gosh. Hold on.
You got it, girl. Come on.
See, David was given a promise, okay? And I'm sure he thought, well, God said, I'm going to be king. Okay, so everyone's just going to listen to God and make me king. But that's not how God works. God gives us a promise, and then he also gives us a process, okay? So David trusted in God. Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. We need to be like David. We need to stand firm knowing that God has a promise for us and he's going to fulfill said promise, okay? Because God has a plan to prosper you, to give you a hope, to give you a future, and definitely, definitely, definitely not to harm you. David trusted in God, and David went on to be king. David went on to his promise. And me, even though I was 13 years old and very scared, I trusted God. I trusted God that he had something bigger for me. I trusted God, and I went from Winnipeg to Kitchener to Ottawa to my church, okay? He brought me to my church. He brought me to meet all of you guys. He brought me to internship. He brought me here on the stage with this microphone, which is so terrifying, but like kind of a little exhilarating, okay? And because God had a plan, God wanted me on the stage to tell you to trust God when things are hard, okay? So what's your heart situation? What are you in right now that's hard? Are you hiding and running for your life? Are you crying because you're not going to LA? I am. But it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how bad your situation is. God is in control and God is in it. God has a plan for you to prosper you for a hope and for a future. So we need to stand strong in that. Let my church, Ottawa, be known for the people that trust God, that stand up and trust God wholeheartedly. So I just want you to remember one thing. Trust God even when you don't want to.
Come on, make some noise for all of the interns. Thanks, man. Man, how good was that? You guys can grab a seat. Man, that was amazing. What I want to do is really kind of bring together, and hopefully you're already seeing a thread when it comes to the life of David and stepping out in faith. And so that's kind of what I want to do, is really kind of bring together and ask this question, how do we summarize David's life? I mean, how do we actually summarize this guy's life? Because when I look at the Bible, when I see David, I think about Kannada, mixed reviews at best. Like, that's how I see it. Just let that sit. All you Kannadaites or whatever you guys call yourselves, we love you. We're glad you're here. We celebrate you. But how do we summarize David's life? And I think when I look at his life, he had a ton of accomplishments, and you've heard some of them today, like some incredible things. I mean, the guy was a hero. When everybody else was saying, I'm not gonna walk into harm's way, I'm not gonna be the guy to put myself in front of Goliath, this kid who has nothing, like he has nothing, he has no family name, he has no reputation, the king's armor doesn't fit him, and he walks into this valley and says, who is this uncircumcised, it got personal, who is this uncircumcised Philistine who's going to challenge the armies of the God, of the living God? Yeah. It's an incredible moment. And then on top of that, this guy was known for conquests. Like, I mean, he literally, in David's reign, the empire of Israel expanded all the way down from what Egypt was, ancient Egypt, all the way up to the Euphrates River. So they took more ground under David's reign. So he's a hero. He's a conqueror. Not only that, he made some killer poems. Like, he could, like, shred it on the harp. Like, to the point where, like, the king would invite him in to play harp. Not only that, he literally got a bunch of his poems published in the world's bestseller, the Bible. So the guy's kind of a big deal. Like, he has some successful things that happened in his life. And, I mean, we've just heard story after story of all of these incredible things. But there's another side to David, too. And the other side to David that the Bible captures is actually David was a murderer. Welcome to church on a Sunday morning. He's like, whoa, what? You guys talk about this guy? Yeah. He literally orchestrated this guy to fall to his death because he had eyes for this guy's wife, Bathsheba. Not only that, when you consider as well, he wasn't exactly like prime father material. There was a lot of drama that happened in David's house. It started with one of his daughters was raped by her half-brother, who was killed by his half-brother, who then led a revolt against David and pushed and destabilized his whole kingdom. And then when David had cleaned that up and unfortunately his son had died and passed away, his second son tried to do the same thing. So now how do we summarize David's life? On one hand, there's the stories that we tell on those flannel grands, like, oh yeah, he did it. And then on the other side, there's a whole lot of other things that happen in David's life. How do we make sense? And I think that there's some mixed reviews on David. I wonder if there's some mixed reviews when it comes to your life. Hey, I'm excelling in this area, and I'm winning big when it comes to my career. I'm taking ground. I'm moving forward, but man, my family life is a mess. Man, my family life is incredible, but I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills next month. I wonder if there's some mixed reviews on your life. Yeah. And it's crazy that when we look at this story, we can pick and choose all these aspects, but the Bible chooses to tell this holistic view and picture of David's story. And this is the interesting thing, as much as there's success and failure in David's story, there's also legacy. And this is the interesting thing about the Bible, because it was written over such a long period of time, almost 1,000 years later, there's two writers, one in the book of Acts, Paul, who talks about David's legacy, and then somebody in the Hebrews, in the writer of Hebrews. This is what they have to say about David's legacy. Acts 13:22. Paul is teaching to this crowd almost 1,000 years after David's reign, and this is what he remembers about David. He says, "But God removed Saul, the king who was there before, and replaced him with David, a man about whom God said, 'I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. He'll do anything I want him to, or everything I want him to.'" This is what another Hebrew writer says. So if you know the Bible at all, in Hebrews 11, the writer of Hebrews, he gives this incredible witness of all of these great men and women who have stepped out in faith. It's kind of the faith chapter. And he says, you know, by faith, Moses did these great things. Abraham did these great things. And David actually gets an honorable mention. Listen to how the writer starts the beginning of Hebrews 11. He says, "Faith shows the reality of what we hope for. It's the evidence of things we can't see. Through their faith, the people in days of old earned a good reputation." So David is lumped into this. This is a guy of old who had a good reputation. And this is what he says. "How much more do I need to say? It'd take too long to recount all the stories of faith in Gideon and Barak and Samson and Japheth and David and Samuel, all of the prophets. By faith, these people overthrew kingdoms, ruled with justice, received what God had promised them. They shut the mouths of lions, quenched the flames of fire, and escaped death by the edge of the sword." And listen to this, "Their weakness was turned to strength." Their weakness was turned to strength. You know, it's interesting that with all of these things, to qualify and disqualify David, the crazy thing is in this story is that the writer actually isn't interested as much in David's actions as he is in David's heart and David's attitude. And so, and this is the thing, is I think if I can encourage you today when it comes around this idea of faith and remembering David, but also looking at your own life, faith doesn't demand perfection. It just asks for persistent dependence on God. Faith doesn't demand perfection. It just asks for persistent dependence on God. You know the thing that made David great? Is that at his best moment and at his worst moment, he's like, "God, I need you." At his absolute lowest moment, he said, "God, I need you." At the pinnacle of his success, he would say, "God, I need you." How do I know this? Because the Bible doesn't just give biographical information on David in 1 and 2 Samuel. We actually get to read some of the poems and some of the songs that David wrote. Can I just read you some excerpts from just a few of them? Psalm 3, he says, "Lord, I have many enemies," got a lot of enemies. And so many are, I think it says that in my translation. "So God will never rescue him, but you, O Lord, are a shield around me. You're my glory, the one who holds my head high. I cried out to the Lord. He answered me from this holy mountain. Do you know when he wrote that? When he was on the run from his son who wanted to kill him. Listen to this poem that David wrote. He said, I'll praise you, Lord, with all of my heart. I'll tell of all the marvelous things you've done. I'll be filled with joy because of you. I'll sing praises to your name, O Most High. You think, man, he must have just gotten saved big. No, he actually just won big. That was when he killed Goliath. Psalm 18, I love you, Lord. You are my strength. You are my rock, my fortress, my savior. My God is my rock, whom I can find protection. This is after he was rescued from Saul. Finally, this last one, I'll just share one more. Have mercy on me, God, because of your unfailing love, because of your great compassion, blot out and stain the stain of my sins. Wash me clean from my guilt. Purify me from my sin, and for I recognize my rebellion. This is when he had actually orchestrated this whole murder of this to get this girl. But do you notice the thread? Do you notice the commonality in David's life? Is that it wasn't so much about his success, it wasn't so much about his failure, but it was about this consistent dependence saying, God, on my best day and on my worst day, I need you. And I just think that we ought to live a life that's not demanding perfection, although that's fine to be the best that you can be and live as well as you can. I'm not advocating to live a sinful life by any means. But what I'm saying is the thing that defined this man, who we still talk about him after millennia, wasn't his good or his bad, but at the end of the day, people looked at him and said, this is a guy who needed God in and through it all. This is a guy who didn't forget what he was. And I want to encourage you that despite your failure, but maybe even despite your success, God ought to still be the center of our world. Wow. David's a mixed bag, mixed reviews. Yeah. I know I'm a mixed review. Yeah. There's areas I win big and there's areas where I lose. Yeah. But I want to have a heart like David, yeah, that says in and through it all, I'm yours. Yeah. I'm here. I'm ready to serve you. I wonder what might happen if we started to accept that in our marriages. Say, God, I messed up again, but I'm going to keep leaning on your love. I wonder if we looked at our success through those lenses and didn't just look at a career as something that you earned and achieved, but looking at God's provision, saying, God, you're incredible. Thank you for opening these doors and giving me the skills and talents and ability. And all of a sudden, when we start to live a life like this, it starts to become bigger than us. It starts to become bigger than our everyday. It starts to become bigger than the universe that's circling around our heads. And all of a sudden, we can start to see value in other people. All of a sudden, we can start to see what God has done in and through other people. And so if I can encourage you today, it's simple. Keep believing. Keep depending on God. Keep believing in your marriages. Keep believing in your relationship. Keep believing in your career. Keep believing when you've lost. Keep believing when you've won. Keep believing when there's nothing else in front of you. Keep believing when you don't have direction. Keep believing when you don't have it all together. Keep believing after that argument. Keep believing after that fight. I want you to keep believing in who God is. As Journey said it best, don't stop believing. But seriously, don't. And I don't know, I just think sometimes we remember and celebrate people for all the wrong reasons. But David, I think, is a story to remind us that it's not our best or our worst day, but it's actually our ability to come back to God, to rely on him, on his goodness. And I think that's what the process is all about. I think that's what these guys were all talking about is each and every one of us just saying every single day, God, I can't do this without you. Yeah. And that's where life becomes beautiful.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, visit our website. And if you'd like to support the ministry of My Church financially, you can do so by following the giving link at livelove.ca. Thank you for partnering with us. We pray this message has blessed and encouraged you.